Good morning. This is Janice Schweizer reading the Pantograph for Tuesday, October 29th, 2019. Today we'll begin with the lead story entitled Season of the Bard, Macbeth Complete Works Among 2020 Shakespeare Offerings by Lenore Sabota. The Illinois Shakespeare Festival is adding a fourth production to its 2020 season and continuing its partnership with Epiphany Farms Hospitality Group. As in recent years, there will be two Shakespeare plays and another classic or Shakespeare-inspired production. This year, there will be a fourth offering, The Complete Works of Shakespeare Abridged. The lineup for the 2020 season was announced Monday evening at Illinois State University's Center for the Performing Arts. The other productions will be Macbeth, One Man, Two Governors, and Measure for Measure. Crystal Howard, director of the Bloomington Normal Convention and Visitors Bureau, said, "The festival enhances the community's economic vitality as well as contributing to its overall quality of life." John Stark, the festival's artistic director, said 10,801 tickets were sold for the 2019 festival, an increase of 1,171 over the previous year. Details are being worked out for meal play packages between the festival and Epiphany Farms Hospitality Group. "It made a lot of sense for us to celebrate the kind of world-class entertainment they provide," said Ken Mizka, Epiphany Farms founder. "We have the same passion for exciting people and provoking emotions." The Complete Works of Shakespeare Abridged will have a limited run from June 4 to 12 in the Ewing Theater. "After moving one production to the CPA a few years ago, we wanted to give our audience another experience in the Ewing Theater," explained Stark. "We found a way to schedule it." Stark said the production is honoring and having fun with Shakespeare and mentions every Shakespeare play. Actors Thomas Anthony Quinn and David Kortemeyer are returning to perform The Complete Works, as they did during the 2011 season of the festival. Once again, William Jenkins, an ISU graduate and head of the theater program at Ball State University, will be the director. "This production is mentioned the most by the public," said Stark, who said its return is a gift back to the community. He said there will be some twists on the original concept. Macbeth will be performed in the Center for Performing Arts, which will allow greater use of special theatrical effects in a play that has elements of sorcery and magic, said Stark. Last performed in 2013, this will be its eighth time in the festival lineup, tying with A Midsummer's Night's Dream and As You Like It. "It's the most popular Shakespeare tragedy that we've done," said Stark. "It tells the story of the ambitious Macbeths, who murder the previous king, then realize they have given up their souls and peace of mind in exchange for the throne." "Macbeth is one of the most accessible plays in Shakespeare," said Stark, "with complex characters and familiar lines such as the witch's refrain of double, double, toil and trouble, out, damn spot, and is this the dagger which I see before me?" This production of Macbeth will be set in a more primal early time in England that will bring to mind Game of Thrones, said Stark. It will be directed by Jeffrey Kent of Denver. One Man, Two Governors, based on Carlo Goldoni's Italian classic, The Servant of Two Masters, will open July 3rd and be directed by Doug Finlayson, head of the directing program at Webster University in St. Louis. The farcical comedy will be set in 1963 England as a man becomes entangled in a web of intrigue, crime, and romance as he tries to work two jobs for double the pay, said Stark. Measure for Measure, which opens July 11th, has been performed twice before at the festival, but, like many Shakespeare plays, it addresses issues that remain relevant and still occur in our world today, said Stark. The play brings up some of the same questions as the Me Too movement, said Stark. In Measure for Measure, Angelo, the Duke's surrogate, enforces a strict moral code on sex at the same time he attempts to use his power to compel Isabella to exchange her chastity for her brother's life. The play will be directed by Jenny McKnight, the theater professor at Indiana University in Bloomington. The Theater for Young Audiences will return in July and August with a new play by Nancy Steele Brokaw. Jazz performances, green shows, and the Bard Bash and Cabaret will be back, too. The next article, Ex-Arena Director Gets Conditional Discharge, by Kelsey Watznauer. The former executive director of Bloomington's downtown arena was sentenced Monday to 24 months conditional discharge and 100 hours of community service after a jury found him guilty of theft of government funds. Curtis Webb, 48, was convicted of stealing from then U.S. Cellular Coliseum, owned by the city of Bloomington. The building is now known as Grossinger Motors Arena. Assistant State's Attorney Aaron Hornsby asked that Webb be sentenced to 60 days in jail, receive 4 years of probation, and fine $3,000, a sentence that will be necessary to deter others that are placed into a similar situation. He also asked that Webb pay $1,149.20 in restitution to VenueWorks, the Iowa-based venue management firm that repaid the city after the theft. Webb worked for the firm from June 1, 2016 until he was fired in October 2016. It was then that VentureWorks officials discovered personal charges on a debit card tied to the operating expenses of the arena. Defense attorney Sham Cusack said jail shouldn't be in the cards for Webb because the last 3 years have been punishment enough. He asked that Webb pay the recommended restitution and, if jail time or fines were necessary, they should be minimal. In addition to the conditional discharge and community service to be completed within 6 months, Judge William Yoder issued a $75 fine and ordered Webb to pay $1,149.20 in restitution. With conditional discharge, Webb will report to a probation officer to ensure he completes his community service. The sentence is considered less severe than probation, Cusack said. The defense attorney said Webb was happy with the results of the hearing. The judge knows he's a good guy, and I'm glad that part got across, he said. Cusack said he will consider pursuing expungement for Webb's felony record and appealing the sentence. Looking at local and state news, we have ISU to add varsity esports by Lenore Sabota. Illinois State University is the latest school to announce plans for a competitive varsity esports team. The esports program will be under the leadership of Campus Recreation and include not only a competitive varsity team, but also several club teams, the Division of Student Affairs announced on Monday. The varsity program is expected to begin in fall 2020. Several schools in Illinois already have esports programs, including Illinois Wesleyan University. IWU opened its esports arena in September 2018, but ISU said it is the first public institution in Illinois to offer esports at the varsity level. The university already has 14 club teams competing in 6 titles or games, a number that is constantly growing, said Don Pote, Executive Director of Campus Recreation. Pote said the university is recognizing our students that are coming in are gamers by nature. But it is not just the gaming opportunity that influenced the decision, she said. It is also the opportunity to tie into academic areas such as video game development, event management, and music for games, while fostering teamwork and leadership skills, said Pote. There are a number of academic programs that recognize the gaming ecosystem, she said. The university is seeking an esports program director to develop, coordinate, and administer the esports varsity, club, and recreational activities. Required qualifications includes 3 years of experience in esports or a related field, including participation as a coach and/or participant. Once the program director is in place, work will begin on recruiting team members, said Pote. We expect that we will have a coach, which may be the program director or another individual, she said. Scholarship money will also be available. In announcing the plans, Student Affairs Vice President Levester L.J. Johnson said, "Beyond the tremendous recruitment potential that comes with a program like this, we are also thrilled about the opportunities to build meaningful connections with this niche population of students." ISU opened a high-tech computer lab in June in Julian Hall called the Digital Innovation Graphics and Gaming Studio, or DIGS, designed to be an incubator for digital and technological transformations on campus, in addition to serving students pursuing esports. Plans for creating a larger esports space in the Bowling and Billiard Center Activity Room as the future of home for esports, but that's unlikely to be completed until December 2020, Pote said. In the time she has been working with students involved with esports, Pote said she has found these students are focused on the academics as well as their games. Next in City Council News, Commission to Examine Zoning for Pot Sales by Maria Nagel. The Bloomington Planning Commission will start next month considering how to amend city zoning regulations for businesses selling recreational cannabis if the City Council decides, possibly in December, whether to allow them. Monday night, the Council voted 7-2 to authorize the Commission to hold a public hearing November 13 and subsequent meetings if needed, but to have its recommendations ready for the Council to consider in December. Let me just clarify, this is a very narrow vote, a very narrow charge, said Mayor Terry Renner. This is not whether to opt in or opt out of allowing the sale of cannabis. After hearing several public commenters, including the Reverend David Halt of St. Matthew's Episcopal Church in Bloomington, urged the council to slow the process down because they feel there are too many unknowns about the impact of cannabis sales on the community, Alderwoman Kim Bray of Ward 9 and Alderman Mboka Malawe of Ward 3 said they agreed with them. Local governments do not have any authority to limit or prohibit anyone age 21 or older from using cannabis beginning January 1st, but they can decide whether to opt out of allowing the sale of cannabis in their jurisdictions. The law also requires licenses for cultivation centers, craft growers, businesses producing products concentrated or infused with cannabis, and those transporting cannabis on behalf of an established cannabis business. Bray's motion to limit the Planning Commission's zoning review to just adult-use cannabis dispensaries and craft growers was defeated by the council, after garnering support only from herself and Ward 2 Alderwoman Donna Bolin. I have heard some folks say that they are supportive of the cannabis sales or dispensaries and the craft growers, but I don't know if anyone is supportive of the ag centers and the processing centers, said Bray. So what I would say is our due diligence requires us to go slowly. There is this idea of not in my backyard, yet some folks say just park it on the edge of town, said Bray, as she pointed to a map showing that's where much of her ward is located. We have executive homes, which have a very high assessed value, and the city benefits from the property taxes they pay, she added. If a cannabis-related agricultural operation sets up out there that has these bad processing odors, we would potentially could be prejudicing our tax base. City staff submitted a draft amendment defining potential operating allowances and restrictions for cannabis-related businesses, but the document is intended to serve as a starting point and not as the staff's recommendation, said City Attorney Jeff Juergens. The draft amendment limited operation of the adult use cannabis businesses to areas zoned for business, agricultural, or manufacturing uses after first obtaining a special use permit. The example document also prohibited cannabis dispensaries from being within 200 feet, 250 feet of residential areas, and 500 feet of schools, daycare centers, residential care homes, churches, and playgrounds. Last week, the Normal Town Council voted 5-1 to send the issue to its Planning Commission to begin addressing on November 7th zoning restrictions on businesses selling cannabis. Ward 5 Alderwoman Joni Painter, Ward 1 Alderman Jamie Mathey, and Renner said Bloomington and Normal should work together so that their cannabis-related zoning restrictions are similar. Next, Blue Ridge Teachers Union approves PACT, Board of Education to vote on Wednesday, by Lenore Sabota. The union representing teachers in the Farmer City-based Blue Ridge School District has ratified a 3-year agreement with the Board of Education, which will formally vote on the contract when it meets at 7:30 p.m. Wednesday. A tentative agreement was reached October 22nd, and the Blue Ridge Federation of Teachers ratified it Sunday. The pact calls for annual salary increases of 2.75% plus any step increases on the salary schedule. It also increases the annual salary for beginning teachers to $37,026 and higher in the following 2 years, according to an announcement sent by Blue Ridge Superintendent Susan Wilson on Monday. Under the agreement, the district will contribute $2,500 a year to health savings accounts for employees who receive district health insurance. Sick leave will increase from the current 14 days to 14 to 21 days, depending on years of service. The new contract also addresses extended use of personal days, terms for use of short-term substitutes, and elimination of fair share requirements. The agreement was reached with the assistance of a federal mediator after the union filed an intent to strike notice with the Illinois Labor Relations Board. The union includes 118 staff members and teachers at the district, which includes the communities of Farmer City, Mansfield, and Bellflower. Next, Connect Transit offers coloring contest by the Pantograph staff. Connect Transit's second coloring contest theme is Connect in the Community. The contest is open to McLean County residents age 14 and under. Entries will be judged in 3 age groups, age 6 and under, ages 7 to 9, and ages 10 to 14. Any medium, paint, crayon, marker, colored pencil, etc., is acceptable, but bright solid colors will reproduce better. Submission deadline is 5 p.m. November 22nd. Finalists in each age group will be selected by November 29th, and the top 5 pictures for each age group will be posted to Connect Transit's Facebook account. First, second, and third places will be determined by the number of likes on Facebook. Voting deadline is December 6th. First place artwork will be displayed on the exterior of a fixed route bus, and the artist will win a prize pack. Second and third place artwork will be displayed inside buses, and those artists will also win a prize pack. Prize pack value is $15. Artwork must reflect the theme of the contest. Each child may only submit one entry, and submission must have the entry form firmly attached to it. A complete list of rules and entry form are at www.connecthyphentransit.com/business/coloring_contest.asp. For more information, call Brendan O'Neill, Community Outreach Coordinator, at 309-829-1157. Here are a couple of business achievements to note. Haddon joins Second Presbyterian. Second Presbyterian Church of Bloomington is welcoming a new senior pastor, the Reverend Triton Trey Haddon. The Reverend Haddon's first Sunday will be November 3rd at 9 a.m. Keel, named Credit Union President. The Board of Directors of Bloomington Municipal Credit Union is excited to announce that Todd Keel will become the President Manager effective November 4th. Todd graduated from Illinois State University with a degree in finance and has previous banking experience. Most recently, Todd retired from a 27-year career with the Bloomington Police Department. During his career, he served in various positions, with his most recent assignment as a sergeant on the 3rd Shift Patrol Division. Todd has been active in the community, serving on several boards and committees, including Bloomington Municipal Credit Union's Board of Directors. He spent over 20 years on the State Committee for Law Enforcement, Torch Run for Special Olympics. There, he organized and volunteered to better the lives of athletes and their families. Todd also serves as the president of the Police Benevolent and Protective Association, or PBPA, of the state of Illinois. Todd replaces Kathy Woosley, who has served as president since 1990. She will remain on staff until her retirement in January 2021. Next, we'll turn to some sports news. ISU sets 2023 game at Oklahoma. SPAC says contest will be challenge boost in recruiting by Randy Reinhart. Illinois State Football has filed its slate of bowl subdivision opponents through 2024 with a biggie. The Redbirds have agreed to a contract with Oklahoma for a game on September 2, 2023 in Norman, Oklahoma. According to FBS's schedules.com, ISU will receive a guarantee of $625,000 to provide the opposition for the perennial national powerhouse. Oklahoma is a great football program, so this will be a great challenge for our team, but also a lot of fun for them, said ISU coach Brock Spack. The opportunity for our players to compete on that kind of stage will be tremendous and should help in recruiting as well. Telling potential recruits about the opportunity to play a powerhouse FBS program like this and the others we already have on future schedules will certainly help moving forward. ISU has other guarantee games set against Illinois in 2020, Western Michigan in 2021, Wisconsin in 2022, and Iowa in 2024. ISU also has scheduled contests at Northern Illinois in 2026 and Missouri in 2027. Oklahoma was ranked 5th nationally before slipping to number 10 this week after a loss to Kansas State dropped the Sooners to 7-1. ISU has a connection at Oklahoma. Former Redbird Assistant Athletics Director Kenny Mossman is the Senior Associate Athletics Director and External Operations for the Sooners. Kenny Mossman called and asked if the date worked, and fortunately it did. We were able to finalize the details of the contract pretty quickly, and I would like to thank Kenny and Director of Athletics Joe Castiglione for this future opportunity, ISU Director of Athletics Larry Lyons said. It will be a tremendous experience for our student athletes, coaches, and fans in a special college environment for football. Continuing, Redbirds ranked 7th. ISU inched up one spot to number 7 in the Stats FCS National Rankings. The Redbirds remained at 7th in the American Football Coaches Association poll. North Dakota State continues to hold down the top spot in both lists after defeating then number 3 South Dakota State last Saturday. SDSU fell to 4th in Stats and 5th with the AFCA this week. The 4th Missouri Valley Football Conference team in the top 10 is Northern Iowa. The Panthers are number 9 in Stats and number 10 in AFCA ahead of a noon Saturday game against ISU at Hancock Stadium. The MVFC has selected ISU junior tackle Drew Himmelman as the league's offensive lineman of the week. Himmelman helped the Redbirds rush for 287 yards in a 24-7 victory over Indiana State. The award is Himmelman's second of the season. Next, former Barry Relish's return to ISU. Former Redbird coach had big role in reviving program. By Randy Reinhardt. As Todd Barry roamed the home sideline at Hancock Stadium a half an hour before kickoff Saturday, the old feelings rushed back. "I'll be in a fetal position down here in the corner in a minute before kickoff," Barry joked. "It's still hard for me to come out to a football game." Barry returned to Hancock Stadium as part of the 20th anniversary of the 1999 team. He served as honorary captain for the pregame coin toss. Barry's role in reviving Illinois State football should not be underestimated. He took the head coaching reins in 1996 of a Redbird program that had not won more than six games in a season since 1972. Initiating a total rebuild, Barry was 3-8 and 2-9 in his first two seasons. As Barry's recruits began to mature, ISU was 8-4 in 1998 and earned the program's first playoff berth. The 1999 season brought an 11-3 mark, a Gateway Conference championship, and a run to the national semifinals. The team's success earned Barry a head coaching offer from Army. He accepted. Barry left ISU with a break-even 24-24 record, but ISU was way ahead of where it had been before his arrival. "I could spend 30 minutes talking about how wonderful this place was for myself and my family, and it still wouldn't be enough to do it justice," Barry said. "I hadn't been back in 20 years. I'm so thankful I had the opportunity to be here during some really fun times." Barry relished seeing his former Redbird players. "People make places special. They always do," said Barry, who will turn 59 on November 12th. "We had some really special guys in that time frame. They are grown men now, but to watch them interact when everybody is seeing everybody for the first time in a while, to look at the camaraderie and the embraces knowing you did something together, it's what makes the game really special." Barry said the 1999 Redbirds had standout players, but there was more to their success. "We didn't win because of the players. We won because of their relationships with each other," he said. "They were willing to play so hard for each other. We had a lot of games where we had to find ways to win. We found ways to win because of that unity." Barry served as head coach at Army and Louisiana Monroe and was an assistant at Miami, Florida, and Nevada, Las Vegas after leaving ISU. He is currently executive director of the American Football Coaches Association. Barry and his wife Lisa reside in Waco, Texas. We'll finish this half hour with the flick fact. True or false? Well, driving east on Interstate 74 and passing through Danville, you are in Vermilion County with one L, and once you cross into Indiana, you are in Vermilion County with two L's. Believe it or not, that is true. That will conclude our reading for the first half of the Pantograph for Tuesday, October 28th, 2019. I will be back in a few minutes to begin reading the second half hour with the death notices on page 2.